This PrivCap podcast is sponsored by Alter Domus, a leading provider of integrated solutions for the alternative investment industry.
Hello and welcome to a PrivCap podcast. I'm David Snow, a partner at PrivCap Media. And today we're joined by Dave Crater from GI Partners, a private equity firm that recently raised a $3.9 billion fund. Dave, welcome to PrivCap today. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, David. It's nice to be here.
So among the various sectors that GI invests in, a big one is the healthcare space. That's what you are actively involved in. And so we're going to hear all about the investment opportunity in healthcare, which of course is a rapidly changing and disrupting part of our economy. So I'm fascinated to hear what you have to say. First of all, why don't we start at sort of a 1,000-foot level? There are many private equity firms that invest in healthcare. How does GI distinguish itself and sort of take a differentiated approach to investing in that space?
We are very thesis-driven. So the overall market is a $4 trillion plus market in the US. And so it's impossible for everybody to cover the entire market. So we look to focus on certain subsectors where we see macro tailwinds behind them. And then we'll spend multiple years understanding the competitive landscape, the dynamics, the regulatory environment, and really trying to figure out what are the handful of companies that we think will be the winners in the long term. And then we take more of a bottoms-up approach to those companies and really try to create an advantage. And so we categorize it into two buckets. One is a process advantage. So we're looking to develop a relationship with management, the sponsor, the founders, so that when it does come to market, we have designated ourselves as a preferred buyer and often can get advantaged access to things. And the other thing that we try and do is a buyer advantage. So if we are able to bring something unique to the table that GI brings, whether it's a combination deal and a transformative transaction or other value creation levers that are unique that GI brings to the table, that allows us to pay the market clearing price without sacrificing our returns. So the combination of the macro thesis in combination with the buyer advantage or the process advantage allows us to differentiate ourselves.
As a deal partner in the healthcare space, what do you spend most of your time paying attention to by way of trends in that space?
Well, there's a lot of trends to be focused on. And obviously, the macro environment is constantly evolving. So we're looking at inflation and interest rates and what that means from a valuation standpoint. From a regulatory standpoint, we're constantly looking at the evolving political dynamic and what regulations are coming about. But the area that I think is most interesting is really looking at where the venture funding is going, particularly in the higher growth healthcare segments such as healthcare IT. That's usually a lead indicator of where the interesting trends are and where they will mature over the next 4 to 5 years, so we can spend time in advance of companies coming to our size and really build out our thesis there.
What can you tell us that is unique about the application of technology specifically within the healthcare space?
So every company that we look at now is either a healthcare IT company or is looking to become a tech-enabled healthcare services company. So approaching healthcare investing with a combination of both a tech and a healthcare background, I think, is a differentiator. If you're investing in healthcare from only a tech background, then you can often miss some of the landmines that are out there. You really need to understand the budgetary pressures or the regulatory pressures that these healthcare companies are under to understand the pain points that are there and then help them solve them. If you're coming at healthcare investing from a healthcare only perspective, then you miss out on some of the opportunities that technology can bring to the companies, such as digital marketing for direct-to-consumer healthcare businesses, or moving from a paper-based system to a technology-based system in clinical trials that helps drive efficiency and efficacy, or EHRs and labor management tools in the provider world, where those can help in a value-based care world really drive better outcomes. So I think having a combination of both tech and healthcare background is an advantage.
A quick follow-up question. I think a lot of people understand that healthcare companies are under all kinds of regulatory pressure, but you mentioned budgetary issues. Walk us through how that could be a landmine if you don't understand them.
So a lot of the reimbursement coming into companies in the healthcare world is either Medicaid or Medicare. And so understanding state budget pressures or understanding the federal budget pressures and what that means to the funds that will be flowing to the providers and therefore impacting what they can pay on IT is really important. A lot of times, if there's a macro situation like the Great Financial Crisis, it takes multiple years for the pressure to flow through the state budgets. And so you actually, the 2008 crisis actually showed up more in the 2011 time period in some of the state budget pressures. So understanding those and how it'll impact both the providers and the IT service systems going into those providers is really critical.
We, of course, are still making our way through the COVID-19 pandemic, which caused many people to adopt technologies, many companies to adopt technologies at a faster pace than perhaps they would have had we not gone through the pandemic. What did you see in the healthcare space? Was there that more rapid and urgent adoption of technologies that they probably should have adopted anyway?
Definitely. I believe that the COVID uncovered a lot of the cracks in the healthcare system and accelerated technology adoption. Telehealth was, you know, been a clear winner, but there's also a lot of other healthcare IT businesses that have benefited from this acceleration. We've seen it for decentralized clinical trials. We've seen it, the adoption in the post-acute market accelerating. We've seen it in a lot of different areas, but, you know, COVID, one of the silver linings of COVID is it really did accelerate the adoption of technology within the healthcare world.
Maybe you can give us an example of this. Talk about the need for better technology use in the post-acute care market. And for those of us who perhaps are not deep in the weeds in healthcare, first of all, define what is post-acute care?
So acute care is usually what's taking place in the hospital system. And so post-acute is when someone's been discharged, usually from a hospital. And if they had surgery on their hip, then they're recovering in the post-acute world. And so that's how you think about post-acute. Post-acute is a critical part of the healthcare system that has been a laggard in adopting technology relative to hospitals. So the HITECH Act that provided funding to hospitals in the 2012 to 2015 period, both post-acute and behavioral didn't receive that same meaningful use stimulus package. Therefore, there's been a slower and longer adoption period of technology in post-acute and behavioral. We've seen things like staff scheduling, population health, compliance, cybersecurity, and just connectivity to different care settings as value-based care becomes more mainstream, become more critical for this environment. One of the things that we've done with NetSmart is become a leader in the different care settings to provide kind of a one-of-a-kind SaaS product that goes across the continuum of care from IRFs or the, you know, discharge that you get from a hospital all the way down to home care settings, palliative care, hospice, things of that nature. So if you can provide technology across that continuum, it really helps manage the patient and create a longitudinal record of their clinical care.
More broadly, can you talk about how technology can be used to drive better outcomes and maybe use a few examples from your portfolio?
I can give a couple of examples. I'd say first, we recently made an investment in a company called ClinicalLink, which is a company that provides technology in clinical trials to help speed up the data collection and analyze the data while making it more accurate. And the company recently signed a large contract with a big pharma company to do the largest decentralized clinical trials. They are able to use their ePRO product, which is electronic patient reported outcomes. So on your phone, if you have symptoms during a clinical trial, you can put them into your phone. And that allows them to do it in a decentralized manner. People don't have to go into the clinical site to go report their conditions. And the ability to do that helps drive better data accuracy. Historically, this had been often done through a paper-based system. And it also creates greater efficiency. The data can be collected more clearly and quicker. And so that creates better outcomes, better ability to provide these clinical trials and hopefully get to the right outcome on approvals for the drugs. Another example, going back to NetSmart, one of the largest healthcare IT providers in both the behavioral and post-acute market, they had a partnership with a company called Coalition of Behavioral Health. And we created a common data set that included clinical information and claims information for all the mental health patients in the state of Missouri. And we were able to create a library of rules, 400 plus rules, that ran across the data set to look at patterns that led to problems. So some of the examples would be bad conditions, combinations of medicine that had been prescribed to a patient by multiple physicians that they weren't aware of. And these negative trends can create issues for patients. By using the data sets and the rules to identify where this was happening, we were able to avoid negative implications and create more positive outcomes. And so that's something that saved the state $75 million annually, but also created better outcomes for the patients. And they're using the same system to track fraud for opioid purposes. So really, you know, everything we're doing is trying to create a better outcome for the patients and drive better efficiency through the healthcare system.
Dave, you also oversee GI's investments in the skilled nursing space. Can you talk about why you find that space to be attractive and what advantages you believe GI has as an investor in that space?
Yes, so we've been an investor in the post-acute market, specifically skilled nursing, for over a decade. And so the trends that we identified a while back that have continued to persist are really the demographic trends, the baby boomer population aging, the need for better care for the elderly population, and the limited facilities, you know, particularly in some places like California, where it's very expensive from a real estate perspective. The number of new facilities for skilled nursing has been pretty stagnant, and yet the population continues to grow. So you look at the ratio of beds to population of the elderly that need them, it continues to be a supply-demand mismatch. And so we've invested in that, did very well in our first investment, and then came back on a proprietary basis to reinvest in a company that is basically acquires underperforming facilities and helps turn them around by providing better clinical care. And so they've obviously been in the heart of the pandemic and really, been heroes in the fact that those frontline workers are providing this clinical care and putting their lives at risk. And so it's been great to be a part of that. It's obviously had some challenges. Occupancy has been down in certain areas of post-acute, but we're starting to see those rebound back to pre-COVID levels.
I would imagine that the skilled nursing space is extremely people intensive. So talk about how technology can help move the needle, help improve operations, when in fact the key ingredient is the people who are providing the care.
That's 100% correct. So in skilled nursing facilities, usually the labor is 50% or more of the revenue. And so it's the biggest portion of the cost structure. And there's also, regulations related to staffing ratios and things of that nature. So making sure you have the technology in place to manage scheduling of staffing, making sure overtime is managed as best as possible, time and attendance tools are critical. And so really investing in that is a differentiator because it helps you manage your biggest cost structure, and then you can reinvest in that money into better clinical care or go make more acquisitions to build the size of the enterprise. So we've been big believers in technology as a differentiator in post-acute.
We are all aware that there's been an uptick in cyber attacks and ransomware attacks on U.S. businesses. Healthcare businesses have been among these targets. Why do healthcare companies and hospitals represent an attractive target for a cyber criminal?
I think there's two reasons. First, it's the most complete information. So you could potentially get the social security numbers, the financial information and their health history if you're able to break into the hospital records. And second, you know, there's just not been the investment in cybersecurity as there has been in the financial industry, which is another, you know, interesting area if you're a hacker. And so the fact that it's been underinvested from a cybersecurity standpoint and the actual data that's available is so critical, makes it a prime target. We've, you know, teamed up with our cybersecurity investment team here and evaluated opportunities and think that there's, you know, really interesting space within healthcare to invest in cybersecurity.
You mentioned regulatory pitfalls that one might fall into if one doesn't understand the healthcare industry well. Seems like an obvious point, but walk us through as a technology investor, what you could get wrong if you don't understand the regulatory environment in which many of these healthcare businesses operate.
I think knowing the sales cycle, the budgetary pressures, and the regulatory constraints are key to investing in healthcare IT, just really understanding the dynamics of your end market. And I think this is why some of the large pure play tech giants have struggled to successfully invest in healthcare IT. You need to have domain expertise to understand the regulatory complexities, the political dynamics, the key influencers, the knowledge base that it takes decades to develop is a key barrier to entry for both investors and for new companies.
From a 1,000-foot view, how do you feel as an investor in today's healthcare market, especially as a technology specialist investor in healthcare? Do you feel bullish? How do you feel about now versus previous cycles?
I'm really excited about the opportunities in front of us. The environment is changing, and so technology is being adopted more rapidly, which means more opportunities, but there are also some newer companies that are coming in with newer types of technology that are more applicable in the value-based care world or in a post-COVID world. And so really being thoughtful and thesis-driven on which areas to choose is going to be critical, but it's one of the most exciting times within healthcare that I've seen in my career.
Well, Dave Crater from GI Partners, thank you so much for spending time with us today, and we hope we can have you back on a future episode of this PrivCap podcast.
Thank you very much.
Like what you hear on the PrivCap podcast? Visit PrivCap.com for more thought leadership interviews, articles, reports, webinars, and more.